You're listening to episode 443. Do you want less ultra-processed food in your trolley or cart at the supermarket? Or maybe a better question is, do you want less obesity, less diabetes, or less of your kids bouncing off the walls because they're jacked up on toxic chemical and sugar-laden foods? Often the challenge is figuring out which foods are actually healthy, because if you hit social media, you'll find out that everything is the devil. But what if you could scan each barcode in the supermarket to get the true health quality rating of that food? So you don't need a biochemistry degree to figure out those 17-letter words on the ingredient list, nor a medical degree to figure out whether or not they're actually healthy or not. The good news is that such an app exists, and it's called Go Coco, which is changing the way that consumers in Spain, the USA, and hopefully soon to be Australia, buy food, so that you and I can both be health-conscious consumers without needing to stand there and read every single label and Google every ingredient before we decide to buy it and eat it. I honestly think this is an incredible tool to empower anyone that eats food to get healthier with really no effort at all. So that's amazing. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome back to another episode of the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. If you are new here, I'd love you to know that this year it's my mission to support 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean dealing with what's really weighing you down, not just the number on your scale. And tying into that mission nicely is today's chat, which is about a hugely beneficial tool for those people that aren't nutrition nerds, but do still care about their health and want to make improvements with their grocery bill. So I'd like you to meet Julie Rule. She's a registered dietitian with over 20 years of experience. And throughout her career, she's been blending her expertise in clinical nutrition with a passion for improving consumers' health through accessible, healthier food choices at the supermarket. And currently, Julie is the registered dietitian for the Go Coco app, which helps you to reduce your reliance on ultra-processed food products, which, as we all know here, is a very good thing. So Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and chat with you today.
Yeah, me too, because the amount of tools and apps and freebies, and you only need to be on social media for 5 minutes to realize there's 1 million different opinions on what is or isn't healthy. And it's overwhelming, to say the least. And I say that as a nutritionist. And I guess, though, the rubber really hits the road when we walk into supermarkets and we're confronted by the finance of our shopping list or what's on sale and the psychology of, you know, what's going on in a supermarket. So I guess my first question is, what is the thing about the app that you have that is sort of going to introduce, I guess, a new way of doing things that doesn't overwhelm people?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, a great place to start. You mentioned ultra-processed foods, and at Go Coco, our mission is to help people make healthier food choices. And one big way that we feel that we can do that is help decrease the amount of ultra-processed foods that people are choosing in the stores and people are consuming. It's over 70% of the products in American grocery stores are ultra-processed. So it's a pretty staggering number. That's only 30% of the foods are not ultra-processed. And I think this is a good point to maybe pause and just talk a little bit about what an ultra-processed food is, because it's a term that's been thrown around a lot lately, but it's also a relatively new term. So a little bit of a definition, a little bit of a background, you know, doesn't hurt at this point. So an ultra-processed food are things that you wouldn't typically have in your home kitchen, or maybe something that your grandparents wouldn't necessarily recognize as food even. There's a difference between processed and ultra-processed. Processed can be necessary. It can be taking fresh vegetables and freezing them so that they have a longer shelf life. It can be canning vegetables. It can be whole wheat ground into a flour so that we can make pasta or cereals. And the natural making of these processed foods isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's when we turn them into ultra-processed foods that we start having some issues. So ultra-processed usually means that there are dyes, additives, preservatives added to improve appearance, shelf life, taste, texture, but usually no added nutritional value. They are created to be inexpensive, highly palatable, and often addictive. And while 73% of products in American supermarkets are considered ultra processed, 19% of consumers say that they consume them. So there's a little bit of a gap in there between what we maybe think we're purchasing and what we are purchasing. And that's where GoCoCo can be really helpful. When you scan any food in the supermarket, over 800,000 in our database, it tells you a score from 0 to 10 about how healthy the food is. And that's based on added sugar, saturated fat, et cetera, and the amount of ultra-processed markers that are in there. So there's a little drop-down that you can click on. It tells you all the ultra-processed markers that are in each food. And it also gives you some healthier products right within the same category you could choose instead. So we're not here to be the food police or to stop you from buying what you want. We're here to give you the information that you need to make the choices that are best for you and your family.
Yeah, that's insane numbers, to be honest. And 70%, you know, of the food in a supermarket or that you can buy being ultra processed in the US is just staggering. And I mean, to me, being an Australian, and I think a lot of the world that isn't the USA potentially feels the same, is that the USA is the home of processed food. And sadly, in addition to that, is the home of the obesity diabetes epidemic. Everybody around the world thinks the USA when we think of unhealthy, terrible food, you know, deep fried, that kind of thing. And so I guess my question maybe predates the app, which is, you know, as a dietitian, you've been in this world for 20 years. What do you think is broken about the US food system that leads to a situation where we need an app like this?
I think so many things. For one, it's hard to even know where to start with that question. So I think, you know, back when I started in nutrition 20 years ago, which that's even hard to believe for me, but there wasn't the term ultra processed food. Like I said, you know, there was a lot of emphasis on fat-free eating, sugar substitutes. And while I, as a dietitian, might have been a little bit outside of the realm of the conventional advice, I was very much proponent of whole foods. Before it had the term UPF, I was telling people to look at food labels, choose foods with the shorter food label, the better. If you can't pronounce the ingredients, you probably don't need them, things like that. But nutrition advice changes a lot. And not even what you see on Instagram, the fads and things, like the advice from the authorities changes a lot. So there's a lot of noise to cut through. It can be very tricky to know where to go and where to start. And you can get overwhelmed easily and just say, forget it. I'm just going to eat this because I like it. So I think that's one thing that GoCoCo is really doing well, is it's even, you know, it's fun to run around the supermarket or your pantry scanning things and seeing what scores you get. Kids like to do it as well. So it's just one little change that you can make to help you make healthier choices. And it's still promoting the same things that I've always promoted, eating more real whole foods.
You mentioned in there even the advice from the authorities and the government bodies that talk about health and nutrition, even that changes regularly. And that brought up a question that I thought of before we talked, which was, what are your opinions of the macro and micronutrient recommendations by government? Because in my personal experience, it's basically, for many of them, at a level of, this will make sure you don't die, rather than, here is a recommendation for average health, let alone optimal health. And I guess, does GoCoCo have to work in accordance with the government recommendations, or can it go more into that space of saying, here's a food or a meal that would actually go beyond the recommended daily intake, which is great for your health?
Yeah. And I think, you know, vitamins and minerals, to your point, very much are at the level of to keep the average person from getting disease, which isn't, you know, maybe where what our goal should be. They should maybe be to live a little healthier than that. I think in regards to macronutrients like carbohydrates, protein, and fat, everybody has different needs, and it can be based on, you know, a million different outstanding factors. And talking about governments changing their mind, you know, something that really comes to mind for me is the food dye conversation that's happening in the United States right now. So actually first California banned 6 synthetic dyes from schools due to their link to behavioral issues in children. And then a few months after that, the FDA finally banned red dye number 3 from foods in the United States. It's been banned in Europe and other countries for a very long time. Before these things were actually banned in the US, GoCoCo had a warning on their, well, not a warning, an alert on their app. So if you scanned a food and it had one of these dyes that's banned in Europe but allowed in the US, it actually tells you that. So if you're asking about, you know, what does GoCoCo have to follow? We do go outside the realms of what certain government bodies are recommending on different things that we feel that there's strong evidence for. And these food dyes that have been banned from schools, we feel strongly that we should let people know they're in the food and let them choose if they want to eat them or not. You know, I personally don't think Skittles or other candy manufacturers are going to have a hard time selling candy, even if it's not fluorescent red and shiny, when they have to get rid of those items. I think, you know, sugar itself will still sell the products. So I think that they're going to do all right. And to that same point, these same manufacturers have made different versions of the food for different countries because they've been banned in Europe for decades for some of them. So they already make these products without these dyes in other countries, yet in the US, we're still allowing them. They have till 2027 to get them out of the foods here. That's 2 more years. So with GoCoCo, you can see if they're in your food now. There's 12% of all foods in the USDA database have one of those dyes that were banned in California or by the FDA.
Yeah, I think I remember from reading some of your stuff that it was 51,000 products that GoCoCo had identified in the US food market that had one of those 6 synthetic dyes. Is that right?
Yeah, you're exactly correct. And what's even worse about that is these are dyes that are known to cause behavioral issues in children. And a lot of the foods are marketed towards children. It's 2 out of 3 candies contain one of the dyes. Whoa. And then you're saying, okay, well, I'll give my children sports drinks instead of sodas. 45% of the sports drinks have one of those dyes in them. Soda is only 1 in 3, slightly better at 31%. And all snacks across all categories, it's 1 in 4. So these dyes are so prevalent in the American diet. And it's very unfortunate that the world thinks of us that way, but it might be warranted. And hopefully we're taking some steps in the right direction finally.
I'm curious just to give a list and some context, because obviously when we talk about neurobehavioral issues, that sort of sounds a bit scientific. But on a more practical day-to-day sort of lingo, what kind of neurobehavioral issues are those kids showing up with, or even adults, I guess, so that people, when they're listening, they can be like, oh, that's what happens when you eat
those. Yeah, like concentration, focus, those are some really big ones. And, you know, kids have those issues anyway. Let's not exacerbate them with these dyes that are known to cause or make those issues worse. And those are some of the biggest.
Yeah. I mean, I would be happy to go on record as adding to that list with ADD, ADHD, varying degrees of autism. Like, I'm a firm believer that our diet plays such a massive role in that, along with other things, of course. You know, there's a whole rabbit hole of conversation with vaccines and or screen addiction and insert other things. So it's obviously not all one thing. But yeah, when I saw the number 51,000 products with those dyes, I was like, whoa, that's insane. But you mentioned tapping into the European side of the conversation, because often that comparison is drawn between the USA, well, and Australia. We hear that comparison between us here as well and Europe. Like, why is Europe so much stricter with their food laws?
I think maybe it comes from the people, honestly. Like, I think there's more demand for it. You know, being growing up in the US, and I personally think that it comes from the people demanding it. And I think that's what's starting to finally change the tide a little bit in the US. You know, there were some pretty well-known people making a lot of noise on social media a couple of months ago about these dyes in foods. And all of a sudden, the FDA banned red dye number 3. So I would love for that noise to continue and the people to keep the demand up for it and keep more changes coming here in the US, because, you know, we don't need our candy to be overly shiny, which is an ultra-processed ingredient, overly red, which is an ultra-processed ingredient. You know, some of these have like 10, 12, 15 ultra-processed ingredients in them to make them the color and texture that they are, and not adding any nutritional value and only adding potential health detriments.
Yeah, people's poor livers doing so much work to get through these foods.
Absolutely. And Coco Cove was actually founded in Spain. So in 2019, it was launched in Spain. So the app is actually fully available in Spanish as well, and launched in the US in 2023. So we have a team in Spain, we have a team in the US. So we really do share a lot of data between the two countries and try to make, you know, the best product possible.
On that note, what big differences between Spanish food culture and American have you noticed? Like, from maybe buying behavior or preferences or things that they scan, is there any data that sort of interestingly separates the two communities?
We've done a lot of comparison between the foods themselves. So if you pick up an Oreo in the US and you pick up an Oreo in Spain, we have a lot of slides and things that compare the nutritional value and also the ingredient deck between any ingredients like sodas, crackers, serving sizes. There's a lot of difference between all of those things. And for the most part, the food label in the US, the ingredient list is much longer. It might contain 4 or 5 types of sugar instead of just one that the Spanish product has in it. I think that is really interesting. I think just anecdotally, I believe that in Spain and other European countries, the food is just less processed and fresher, you know, as it is. If you go to, for example, like a train station in Spain, you can actually get a sandwich that is made within a day or a couple of days. If you go to a transportation hub in the US, you're getting something in a package that could potentially be there for a year. So there's just a lot of difference between the freshness, the preservatives, just different sort of culture around the two countries.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people listening have traveled, and it's no secret that whether it be Spain or Greece or Italy, that these are countries that are very proud of their food. And I think, you know, I was most recently in Italy, and you know, the thing that I love about Italian cooking and food is that they're so good at extracting the natural flavor from the food. But that then depends on the farming practice that was employed in order to create a food that actually has flavor that hasn't been diluted.
Yeah, and I think you're eating it so much more fresh in those countries as well as you are in the US. Like I mentioned, like you can get a sandwich in a train station in Spain that was made a day ago. US, you're getting a package. It's not going to taste like anything because it has a year-long shelf life. So there's a ton of stuff added to it to give it some flavor and things too. So many reasons why we can improve what we're doing here.
Yeah, I'm curious, is there any, maybe this is a stage two thing, but speaking of farming practices, is there any information in the app about farming practices and maybe the types of farms that these foods come from or affiliated with, or the ingredients came from? And I ask that question because there's a big move, at least in sort of my world, of, you know, regenerative farming and amp grazing, and all of that results in a very great consequence or, you know, outcome for the consumer, which is the nutrient density of food is better. And with increased nutrient density comes increased flavor content or profile. And so there's this push here in Australia, at least, where people are starting to, you know, skip the supermarket altogether and go straight to the farm. And obviously that's not practical for the vast majority of people, which is why I asked the question. I'm wondering if people, you know, can make that conscious choice to support farming practices or supply chain practices that are more in alignment with their ideologies or beliefs and or the health of the planet or the health of their family.
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar, and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too, which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think, like you said, maybe that's phase two for us, something we can consider down the road. We definitely promote, we have a lot of lessons within the app as well, and we promote Whole Foods as much as possible. We support, I mean, the Whole Foods themselves, not the supermarket chain, like eating, you know, an apple instead of a processed apple chip, for example. We also support shopping local and give reasons why. So we're certainly on board with what you're talking about, but the app itself doesn't take that into account yet with the scoring of it.
Yeah. And maybe it's like, maybe, and I'm just like going off the top of my head right now, but you know, I don't know if you know, but in investment apps, you can choose whether your investments are ethical or not. And maybe it's like a filter inside the app. You know, you can choose to factor in whether or not it comes from a good farm or you don't really care. But anyway, just going off the top of my head.
I think it's a great idea. We very much take suggestions from our users because we're still somewhat new. And one thing that actually did come directly out of our user data was we have something called the diabetes alert now. So we didn't initially design the app for people living with diabetes or at risk for diabetes. But when we are always looking to poll our users and find out what's most beneficial for them, we found out that a very large percentage of them were living with or were at risk for diabetes. So we got to work on creating something that could be more useful for our user database. So now when you download the app, in the onboarding questions, it asks you if you are somebody who's at risk for or living with diabetes. And if so, if you'd like to opt into diabetes alerts on foods that you scan. So in addition to the health score, you'll see pop up a diabetes alert, and that talks about the amount of added sugar, processed, refined carbohydrates, saturated fat. The alert tells you why you're getting the alert you got. So is it the added sugar or is it the refined carbohydrates? And then it also gives you tips, like if you're going to eat this white pasta, consider having some lean protein, some vegetables with it, because that can help with the glycemic load and the glucose spikes that you might experience from a food that has a lot of refined carbohydrates. So that's something that came directly out of user feedback. So we are always looking to our consumers to help us improve the app even more.
I think that's awesome. You mentioned the health score, like that I guess the different foods get when you scan them. Can you just like walk us through a little bit about what the health score is, how that number is derived?
Yeah, so it's 0 to 10, 0 being the worst and 10 being the best. It takes into account how much for different food categories. So we're using the WHO guidelines. We're also using the Chilean stop sign warnings. They actually put front of pack warnings on food labels for foods that are higher in sugar, saturated fat, calories. But they've got some really great data coming out of buying behaviors based on these new front of pack warnings. So we take their levels into account, the WHO recommendations. And then we also use something called the NOVA scoring system. That's the sort of the gold standard for ultra processed markers. And it's done by category. There's a lot of information that goes into it. You can read it all on our website because it's pretty complex how we get the score. But summary is the amount of saturated fat, the amount of added sugar, the amount of calories per category, and then those ultra processed markers. And I think really one of the best things about it is it doesn't just give you a score. It just doesn't say this food scores a one. It tells you exactly why. So you can click into drop downs and see, okay, this has a lot of added sugar compared to other products in the same category. This has 15 ultra processed markers in it. And like I said, there's also, as a dietitian, what I like the best is the alternative food option. So you can click on that button and see, like if you're looking at cereal bars or protein bars, for example, and yours scored 2 or 3, you can click on that button and it'll give you some choices that score in the higher half, like 7, 8, 9, 10, which is great because then you can decide if that's a good swap for you at that time.
That's awesome. I love the idea of that. Yeah, alternative options. Because it's one thing to get bad data about your choices and be like, oh, I eat terribly. You know, it's another thing to actually be like, well, you can still eat, but here are some better choices.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And to take it kind of even a step further, another thing we're testing in the app is you can take a picture of anything you've eaten. So you don't have to scan the barcode. If you have a meal of mixed foods in front of you, take a picture of it. And we have something called a real food tracker. So we're able to analyze what you've taken the picture of and give you an estimate of how much of your plate is real food versus processed ingredients, what percentage of it is fruits and vegetables. And we kind of help you to increase your percentages of real food and fruits and vegetables over time by giving you summaries and suggestions and things. That feature is still in beta, but it's working pretty good and we're getting some really good feedback on it. So we have the barcode scanning feature. You can take pictures of your food. We're really trying to help people decrease the amount of ultra-processed foods they're consuming.
Yeah, totally. And what I was going to ask you a question, like how does AI play into the app and how does it help and that kind of thing? But so I assume that's what's behind the photo idea.
The real food tracker is powered by AI, which the AI is powered by the dietitians, refining it and improving it. You know, all of us have to help the machines to learn. But we're getting really good feedback on that so far. So we're excited about continuing to improve that feature.
As a dietitian, for the user data, like looking at the user data that you've been extracting over time, what surprised you about what the data was saying?
You know, I don't know if I would necessarily say anything surprising. I think the thing that surprised me most, honestly, is just what percentage of our foods are ultra processed. You know, it can be really hard to go to the store and find packaged foods that aren't ultra processed. You know, even as a dietitian, I'll scan things and I'll be like, oh, didn't realize those pistachios I was eating had added sugar and added flavor. Not going to buy those anymore. So I think people probably have the same experiences, things that we even think are healthy, that are marketed to be healthy, that have names that imply that they're healthy. Like the word good or healthy might be right in the name of the product, and you scan it and it has tons of things in there that, you know, we wouldn't want to be eating. So I think, you know, the data kind of reflects that. A lot of the foods that are scanned are less healthy foods. And I think that's because that's a majority of what is available. And we even have a little pop-up that says, like, oh, scanned a few things in a row that have a low score. Don't get frustrated. You know, here's some things that you can try instead, because we know that it's really hard to find things that aren't processed.
Well, and I guess the difficult thing is as well is that often the healthier the product becomes, the less subsidies that are built into that supply chain and or farming practices, so the more expensive it is. So it's one thing for us to obviously, and I too have the mission of trying to get the world healthier, but the challenge often that I'm confronted by is that the healthier option is more expensive. And with the economy and inflation and feeding kids and stuff like that, it becomes really challenging to be healthy. And then we end up in this just pit of Instagram-driven awareness that we're making terrible choices, but stuck in this sort of between a rock and a hard place of not really being able to live that healthy life that we want to live.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I do work with people to kind of come up with solutions for how they can save money, but still be healthier. You know, like instead of having in your mind, I need to buy blueberries today, say, I need to buy 3 fruits and go to the supermarket and whichever fruits are on sale and look in season and healthiest, pick those 3 fruits. You know, maybe they're on sale for buy one, get one free. You get 2, you freeze one. So kind of instead of being, you could be a little bit more flexible, make it a little bit fun, even say, okay, I'm going to buy from the produce section, you know, 5 things that are on sale. And that can really be a good money saving plan. Also, cooking at home, certainly less expensive than going out or getting takeout, carry out, fast casual, fast food. So if you can switch one meal a day to cooking at home, you can save money that way. And we have a lot of recipes in the app too to help people do that. And then, you know, shopping the perimeter of the store, a lot of that stuff that's in the middle of the store, the packaged foods are more expensive as it is. So choosing foods from the outside of the store, it's a real thing. We all need to, you know, be conscious of what we're spending. We can't just buy something because it's the absolute healthiest, money, no issue. You know, we all have to figure out what's going to work best for us. And I like to try to help people focus maybe one meal or one snack at a time to make it a little bit healthier and cost conscious as well. So a lot of people, at least in the US, will grab a breakfast on the way into work. They'll get a coffee. You know, that's very expensive. If you can make something at home for breakfast, make your coffee at home, you've already saved like $10, $15 a day first thing in the morning. And that can help you to purchase more higher quality foods for the rest of your meals.
Yeah, it's difficult to stay out of this hyper-paced world where it's, you know, go, 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 go. But also it's only been in the last generation or two where we've started to really devalue the importance of food and cooking and, you know, mealtime. And that used to be a really important thing that would happen every day. And you know, I guess the movement from women being at home all of the time into the workforce is maybe a part of that, because now nobody's at home, man or woman, doing the cooking, you know. But it's been interesting to watch that decline of the importance of food. And I definitely consider myself an advocate for trying to, you know, represent food and say, hey, mealtime matters. Like, we've got to get back to food actually mattering, because we treat it in a way that it's like, if I can eat and drive and work and talk on the phone at the same time, then I'm hyper productive and amazing. But, you know, do that for 30 years and there's a bunch of nervous system, gut issues, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, yeah, I totally back the idea of wanting to promote cooking at home more and being in touch with what's actually fueling your body and your thoughts and your life.
Yeah. And, you know, another interesting thing that I thought of while you were kind of talking about that shift is another shift to just how many foods there are in supermarkets. So in the 1950s and 60s, there were between 5,000 to 10,000 foods in a supermarket. Now a typical U.S. supermarket has as many as 60,000 foods.
Wow.
So it's not that we have a lot more produce. It's that we have a lot more packaged foods available to us, and most of them are ultra processed. So, you know, that's another really big shift. So we're eating away from home more often. When you do go to the supermarket, a lot of that food is very processed anyway. So when you're cooking, you know, again, like sticking to the perimeter, buying as many whole natural ingredients as possible. There's certainly strategies like batch cooking, meal planning in advance, cooking enough so that you have several days worth of meals, prepping a bunch of one type of protein and using it in several different ways. You know, I think that those are strategies that I help people implement into their lives so that they can make meaningful changes and cut back on the amount of processed foods.
As you were saying that, what came to mind for me was supplements. And what I mean by supplements is that the content that is in nutritional supplements has to come from somewhere, right? And so it's like it comes from inevitably farms and produce, but instead of going to sell produce, it goes to factories, which become nutritional supplements. And obviously there's synthetic versions of things, but in the supermarket, the produce is there, but all of the manufactured stuff in some part came from produce from farms. So it's like, if we could just, yes, just skip out on the creation of all of these fake foods and the Frankenstein foods that have all of these added things, and actually just put the produce in the produce section, that, yeah, we're going to end up in a crisis either way in regards to food security or food supply. Because the other thing is that there's so much waste that happens in the manufacture process of foods as well, when we're creating bag, a box, or a can kind of ultra-processed stuff. So at least if we get the actual produce, we're going to use most of it at home, assuming that it doesn't end up in the bottom of the drawer, forgotten about, and then we find it covered in mold.
Yes, I always advocate leaving your healthy foods right front and center instead of in a drawer. As soon as you get home from the supermarket, if you can, cut up the pineapples or the strawberries, put them in a bowl right in front so they're easier to get to, so that you don't forget about them as easily. You know, and only buying as much as you need to last few for a couple of days, because like you said, those things do go bad quickly. So, you know, if you're not going to be able to freeze them or use them, put them right front and center. So hide the unhealthier things behind it, so you have to go looking for them.
Yeah, totally. I guess for anybody listening, like, who is the number one person, or maybe the top three types of people that might be able to use this app that you would recommend? Like, it's really important that you would download this and use it. Obviously, everybody can benefit, but like, who are we starting with?
Yeah, you know, I think based on our data, the people that are getting the most benefit from the app is people who are at risk for or are living with diabetes, because it is sort of alerting you to those foods that maybe aren't the best choices. And then there is a lot of education in there as well. And especially if you're newly diagnosed with diabetes, you know, there's so much to think about and so much to learn. So this is a easier, healthier starting point. I am certainly not saying you shouldn't continue to work with your healthcare professionals. You absolutely should. But this is just something that you can use in addition to that. I also think this is a fantastic thing for parents to use with kids. Kids think it's fun. You get to run around and scan things, and things pop up on the phone. And a lot of my friends will use this with their kids, and it does help them make better choices for their lunch boxes. It's giving them a little bit of autonomy, saying like, that juice box isn't actually made out of fruit like I thought it was. Maybe we could try a different one. And you scan something else. Kind of helping kids make some choices usually can help lead to better eating habits in kids. So that, I think they are really very a great target for this. And then people who eat a lot of fast or convenience foods because either they're very busy or they don't have time to prepare meals, they can at least scan and get the choices that are going to be the best fast convenience foods for them.
Yeah, fantastic. And where can everybody find that on their phone, in the App Store, online? Where are we sending everyone to get involved?
Yes. So the App Store, just search GoCoCo. It's available for iOS and Android. Our website is gococo.app. You can find a lot of information about all of these health scores and ultra processed foods on our website. And GoCoCo, I should say, stands for Go Conscious Consumer, because we really are, you know, trying to help people make better choices one choice at a time.
You read my mind. I was going to do the conscious consumer thing as well, but you did it instead. So perfect. And before we wrap up, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
I think try not to change everything at once. So start with one thing. So take a look at one thing that you can change. Are you putting sugar in your coffee? Are you putting artificial sweetener in your coffee? Are you putting, you know, sugar and artificial sweetener in your coffee? Take a look at your daily diet and start thinking of one place you can make a change. Make that change and then find another place that you can make a change. You know, could you cook one meal at home instead of three meals out? So I really think starting small instead of feeling like it's all or nothing, especially this time of year, we had New Year's somewhat recently. That's a big time for all or nothing. You know, small changes really do lead to lasting results. So I like to advocate for finding a few things you can work on one at a time, make those changes, get those changes to stick, and then move on to the next thing. You'll feel so much better from that one change that there's motivation to keep going with additional changes. So for me, it's kind of cutting through the noise and all the information out there and taking a look and analyzing and figuring out one place you can make a meaningful change.
Yeah, I'm all about it. I often bang on about doing one tweak a week, one small change a week.
Yeah.
So totally in alignment with what I feel and do as well. So, but thank you so much for being here. Hopefully we get a few more people onto the app and start spreading this news, because I think, yeah, that's, it's going to do great things for the health of the people that use it. So obviously, therefore, we want millions of people to use it. So hopefully we can add to that pile of people.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate that. And we appreciate everything that you're doing as well. I feel like there's so much alignment. So just really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and speak to your audience.
Oh, you are so welcome. In the meantime, we'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds great.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.